Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, and this is episode number 33 of the Vex on Vex podcast. Now, we're recording this on November the 16th, 2018, and this is kind of a special show because November 16th, 2017 was the date that I began my first ever podcast recording. Now, it wasn't on the Vex on Vex program because we're only 33 episodes in. It would be 52 if it was a full year. However, today is the first day that Johnny Zero and myself recorded our first ever TV Dads Wrestling podcast, you know, episode. So that being said, I just wanted to podcast today. It's a snow day here in the great city of Philadelphia. Not really. It snowed on November the 15th, and then everybody's kind of digging out and dealing with it. And ironically enough, schools are closed on November 16th, which does not make a great deal of sense to me. So if there's some noise in the background, that is my now ex's 8-year-old son that I've been relegated to watch for the day, which is fine. He's awesome. At any rate, I have a friend coming by. His name is Mike. He's been on the show before. It is not the great Michael Belinsky, who will be appearing in a future episode. This is my friend Mike. We had a talk a few weeks ago about everything and nothing all at the same time. He will be here momentarily, and we will kick off episode number 33, the one-year anniversary of me actually recording podcasts. So thanks for tuning in for all these episodes and listening to all these programs and being nice and loyal listeners. So bear with us. We'll be back momentarily. Thank you for bearing with us, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back again. This is VexX, along with my host, Michael.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
So, I asked you, because I don't like to do the whole pre-talking thing before someone sits down. And then we're friends, so I see you, and it's like, hi. No, no, don't talk. Just sit down. We'll do the whole thing on the microphone. Did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I have not.
Why?
I've been busy. A lot of work lately, a lot of life stuff like that, so I haven't had a chance. And the person that I've been wanting to go see the movie with, she just became available to go and see it yesterday.
Oh, so you should have seen it yesterday, and this is why you suck. No, I'm just kidding.
This is
snowstorm. Snowstorm.
Yes, exactly.
So do you have the Tesla outside?
No, I do not.
Ah!
I know.
Michael!
I'm working on it.
What? I thought you had it.
I do, but I gotta pay the rest of the taxes on it, and I have to pay for the installation of the charging unit.
So you don't have it?
No, I will have it. I will have it soon.
That's why I was like, come over. We'll look at the Tesla. It'll be amazing.
Next time I come over, we'll be able to do that.
All right. I respect that. That makes sense. So how'd the snow treat you yesterday?
I stayed inside 98% of the day.
I didn't go out at all. Wow. I didn't even shower. I'm a horrible, awful human being.
I resonate with that as well. I went to Aldi first thing in the morning to pick up some food that I didn't have. Of course, I needed the milk and the bread.
Of course.
So I went and got the milk and the bread, hysterically, of course.
Of course.
It's the only way to do this.
And there's no milk there, and there's no bread there.
Actually, they were well-stocked.
They were well-stocked?
When they first opened, before all the snow started and it got horrible, I was like, I'm going to the store.
I respect that. Is that a Philadelphia thing or an East Coast thing? Like, what do you think?
I believe that's a Philadelphia thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've only ever lived here in winter.
Yes. I've lived a couple other places outside of Philadelphia in the wintertime, North Carolina, Alabama, and
But there's no
Texas.
Snow in those places, man.
No. It snowed once while I was in North Carolina. It shut down the entire eastern part of the state.
Like their mind melted. They're like, oh my God, what is this white substance?
I took my El Camino out and did donuts in the parking lot. So
now, it's weird because we're pretty hardened here in the great city of Philadelphia and on the East Coast in general when it comes to the snow. But all the memes that you see on Facebook yesterday especially are, oh my God, it snowed and everybody can't drive all of a sudden.
Pretty much.
But you got to, I guess, reacclimate. I don't know. I didn't even leave my house. I didn't even leave. And then I was so well rested from not doing anything yesterday that at 6:30 I was out cleaning my car and my work truck.
I did the same. I was up at 4:30, went and did my morning workout, and went back to bed until about 8:30.
Yeah.
So
now you're here.
Yes.
So do you have work today?
I'm doing some work for Tesla this afternoon.
I was going to ask you, the last time we had spoken, which was weeks ago,
yes.
You had to wrap it up before Thanksgiving. Is this the same project?
No, I get weekly projects to take care of.
Okay.
They give me a deadline when they need it done by,
yes.
And I get it done well before that 99.9% of the time.
Of course, that's what you do. You crush things.
It's what I do.
The powerful. I can't believe you didn't see Bohemian Rhapsody. I thought we were going to talk about that for like an hour and be like, oh, it's so great, blah, blah. And you know what? I'll tell you the truth of it. How big of a Queen fan are you?
I'm a big enough Queen fan that the person I want to go with is just as big a Queen fan as I am, and she would probably kill me if I went and saw it without her.
If you're well-read on Queen, you might be slightly disappointed.
Oh, no.
No. It's just slightly. Right. Visually, it is breathtaking. Now, the kid's not perfect because I'm a Freddie Mercury, not aficionado, but a huge fan, sincerely, and have been my entire life, like from like 7, 8 years old, which we discussed previous podcast. I found him through the power of pro wrestling and all that good shit by mistake. So, huge Freddie fan. And the eyes don't work for me because Freddie looks very specific and the actor has different eyes. He just does. The shape of him, the whole thing. Now, listen.
Yeah.
There's a point when there's around 82, 81 and they're doing a press conference and he's wearing the fucking sunglasses so you don't see the eyes and you would think it's Freddie fucking Mercury.
Right.
For real.
Okay.
Which is astounding. The sensibility is there. I think Freddie was taller than the gentleman is, if I'm not mistaken. But overall, if you don't know the whole sordid history, it's cool. I'll never forget this. We had a DJ in the band a million years ago. Remember when the Muhammad Ali movie came out?
Yes.
It was a black guy. He went under the stage name of DJ Retro or Taz. He has a million names, actually. I guess they're called, what's that word? Oh, I'm blanking.
Monikers?
No, the other one. Aliases.
Aliases, yes. Also known as.
Yeah, exactly. So he had a bunch of them. And so he was our DJ. And when the Will Smith movie came out for Muhammad Ali, again, I'm a pretty big Muhammad Ali fan. Mm-hmm. I know his history. I understand like everything about him because I'm well read on the subject. And I said to him, you saw the movie? He's like, yeah. I'm like, how is it? He's like, it's kind of like Muhammad Ali for dummies. No. But if you don't know the idiosyncrasies of Muhammad Ali, it's a great film.
Right.
It is. But I know the depth of the story. So when you saw the film, it was like, eh. And, all right, let's be realistic. Will Smith did get ripped for the part. Ali was a massive fucking man.
Yeah, he was.
Will Smith's not a massive anything.
My father and I saw him at a fundraiser down in Center City when I was a teenager.
Sure.
And he was huge. Yeah, I wasn't a small guy, and neither is my dad.
And this guy like was massive.
And he was. He dwarfed us in size. And this is well after his career.
Like a big human being.
Right.
And then Will's on the screen, and you know how what gives it away? If you see Ali in the original like pictures, and there's like images of him moving and speaking, he'd fill out a suit like a fucking monster. Like little Frankenstein wearing a suit.
Right.
And there's Will Smith with a skinny little neck, which is cool, because when he took his shirt off and he got in the ring, the arms were rippling. But he, dude, Ali wasn't built like that. Ali was just fucking big and fast.
You know who I think would have been a better physical representation of Ali?
Who?
Michael Jai White.
Oh, he played Tyson, though. And he's not as tall. You didn't know that?
No, I did not.
The Tyson film that was released in the 90s, he plays Tyson. That's the first time I saw him before he was Spawn.
Okay.
He was Mike Tyson. So it might have... I don't know if he had the range as an actor to really pull
it
off.
That's what I think so.
And he did kind of look like Tyson, though. Like, his frame and his build is a stockier, shorter...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he did look like Tyson at that time. So, no. I disagree.
Okay.
But Ali was very handsome.
Right.
Better looking than Will Smith, even, who's like a good looking guy, I guess. But like Ali was like, hey, I'm Muhammad Ali. And like, I'm so pretty. Oh, I'm so pretty. I love Muhammad Ali. There's a huge poster of him in my office, actually, but you don't care. So anyway, this film, Bohemian Rhapsody, is Queen for Dummies. Like, I own a roofing company, as you know. And I'm friends with the gentleman who works at our roofing supply place. I'm going to give him a free plug because they're my homies. Stellwagen Roofing Supply. If you need roofing supplies, not that you fucking do, but if you did, Stellwagen.
Call them.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. And the thing of it is, there's a couple of Stellwagens throughout Philadelphia. There really are. There's actually a lot. But I always go to the same one because the guys, the staff at that Stellwagen, which is off of Tarsdale Avenue and Benner, Tarsdale and Benner, are phenomenal. So there's a young guy behind the counter. He's 25, 28 something. He's young. Love this guy. He's my man. I go in there, and then Queen came on the radio, and I'm like, oh, you're going to see. He's like, I can't wait to see the movie. Now, I know that a 25-year-old guy doesn't get it. He doesn't get it, because how could he? Not to be like an age supremacist, if you will. But no, for real, like, I remember when they walked the earth and Queen was a thing.
Right.
I remember Live Aid. Do you know where you were when Live Aid happened?
I was mixing concrete with my father and my next door neighbor out back of our house in Juniata.
How hot was it that fucking day?
Really hot.
Really hot.
Really hot. And I'm in a mixing bin. It's okay. Just a bin with concrete in it, wearing a pair of shoes that I would never see again. mixing concrete. Stepping on it like I was mixing grapes, because my father's father, my grandfather, he had me smashing grapes when I was a kid in his basement.
You've had an interesting, colorful time.
Yeah, it was literally, my feet were purple for a long time. Anyway.
A member of my family, my second cousin or something removed or whatever, had gotten married in the summer or the spring of 1985.
Okay.
I was 9. Go, I do the wedding. I'm in it. I was like a ring bearer or something. Mm-hmm. There was like, the bride had a little sister who was like my age. I was like, hey, oh. Nothing happened. I wanted it to happen. And even in 9, I was like, hey, you know. But it didn't happen. So we hang out. We're doing our thing. And there were commemorative matchbooks from this wedding that my mother kept in the bathroom. I don't know why they were in the bathroom. They were on the windowsill. They were beautiful. Like, really nice.
Okay.
It's the 80s, man. Everybody fucking smoked. What do you want?
Yeah.
So I would get up in the morning and I would light a match and smell it. They smell the sulfur? No, this is weird. I'm 9, right? And then drop it in the toilet, and then I'd urinate and flush it. And this is how I started my day for some fucking reason. That day I didn't flush it. So my mother comes up to like clean the bathroom, and she looks in the toilet and there's the matches. The fucking matches. And I'm 9, right? You're not allowed to touch matches when you're 9.
Not at all.
Hell rained down upon me. Like, I just remember spending the entire day in like emotional turmoil. It's for real. And then we went to, and this is so weird, remember how hot it was? It was a hot day. We went to a flea market in Harrogate where my millionaire grandmother, who was literally a millionaire, was selling her wares. Like, she was so messed up from the depression that even though she had millions of dollars in the bank, she still wore used clothing and drove a really old car and would sell things at the flea market.
I've met a lot of people like that from that generation that experienced depression and then they kind of like soldiers that never came back from the war.
They can't let go.
Yeah.
And so that was my grandmother. So we go to visit my grandmother, who's at the flea market. My mother bought me a drafting set. Yeah, because back in 85, it wasn't computerized yet. You actually had to draft things.
Yeah.
And I kind of got into it for a minute. I thought it was very interesting.
That was one of my first majors in high school.
There you go.
Mechanical drafting.
So we come home from the flea market. She's still kind of, air quotes, mad at me. Still kind of. Air quotes mad at me. But we get home. And I turn on the television and there it is. Fucking Live Aid, right?
Right.
And I'm just little. I'm 9. I don't get it. My mom could not have cared less. Like, they were like, oh, those hippies, blah, blah, blah. But I watched it. And I watched it the whole fucking day. I remember when I left to go to the flea market, we were watching it, or I was watching it. I come home, I'm still watching it. And my dad, who was not a fan of rock and roll in any capacity, although he did play guitar, ironically enough, I found out later.
Hmm.
Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah.
Like a Glenn Campbell knockoff type of thing. Like a rhinestone cowboy, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he didn't appreciate me. I remember, well, I'll tell that story in a second. So anyway, we were watching Live Aid, and I see these glorious performances and this magical stuff, and, you know, Freddie Mercury. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it was kind of amazing.
Yeah, I remember the performance of, what was the song? Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in awe watching that performance.
And it was, here's the beauty of it. There's no studio tricks. He's just performing it on a piano.
Correct.
And the movie lets you in on a secret that he was having throat issues that day. And I'm a singer. Now I watch the footage post-film. And I can see it, or hear it, I should say. Like, he's not quite hitting where he would.
I did notice that in a couple points.
It's weird.
He didn't do exactly like he did in the studio.
Exactly, exactly. But I never even picked up on it. I just kind of thought it was like a musician's interpretation.
Right.
But if the film is accurate and he was having throat issues leading up, that's kind of interesting and cool. You know what I mean? Like, this little secret. The film leaves a lot out, in my opinion. It has some stuff in it. It glosses over things. It's Queen for Dummies. So if you don't know anything about Queen, like, they didn't even play Fat Bottom Girls. I love that song. There's not enough music, in my opinion, in the film.
I know they can't see me, but I'm dumbfounded.
Right? It's like the greatest tune, right? Like, there's a lot of great Queen. There's a lot of great Queen. And I don't know. I did like, I'll tell you, the guy who plays, I can't think of the guitar player's name. I'm so ashamed to say
Brian May.
Thank you. That's so embarrassing. He looks just like Brian May. Like, he really, really does. Now, the bass player, the actor, is going around saying that he looks like the guy. Kinda.
Right.
And the drummer does not look like the drummer, but he's got the whole mannerisms down.
Right.
And I'm a musician. You're a musician. They were fucking playing. Like, if you watch, that bass player's playing the bass lines. He's right. An actor, but I guess they learned for a year or whatever, and he's playing it. Like, he's plucking the bass. The drummer's really playing for real. I'm playing hard. He might not be dynamic or great, but right. He is playing.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated. And then I kind of heard that they used this this guy that you could see on Facebook who just sits down and he plays all the Bohemian Rhapsody parts. When he records himself, he plays the piano and he sings.
Yeah, he kind of looks
and
like
him. And he kind of looks like him.
Kind of looks
so
like Freddie Mercury.
The rumor, and I don't know if it's substantiated.
Love Child. What? Oh,
mathematically impossible. He probably wasn't even born in 91, to be honest with you.
Probably.
For real. But the thing of it is, I've heard he's kind of involved in the voicing.
Okay.
Because you can't nail everything from recordings and it's old and degenerated. The movie sounds great. The guy playing Freddie really is remarkable. It shows the dynamic of being in a band and kind of what it's like. You would know this and I would know this, but the general public wouldn't. So it's just dumbed down for everybody.
Right.
Massive plot holes in my humble opinion. Like, all right, I'm going to tell you one. I don't even know if you know about this. Do you know anything about the Golden City? What the hell is it called? Please bear with us. This is so embarrassing. I had to literally pause this to find out a historical fact on the great thing called a Wikipedia. Little Steven, the guitar player for the E Street Band, who left for a while, then he was back. He's he was Silvio on The Sopranos. I'm not sure if you ever watched that show or not.
Yeah, I've caught a couple episodes.
I adore that show, by the way. I've been watching it again on Amazon Prime for free, because I have Amazon Prime.
What was that? Oh, I've been watching Spartacus.
Never even knew it existed. I heard of it, kind of, but not...
Good show.
Isn't there a lot of like male genitalia in that, or is that the other one?
No, yeah, there's a lot of male genitalia. Like, a lot.
A huge Freddie Mercury fan, not a fan of the weenus. So, I'm good. At any rate, there was a controversy. Africa had still had apartheid in the 1980s, which I'm sure you're aware of. There was a specific city called Sun City with a tyrannical leader, and they designed this beautiful palatial building or arena to host like rock shows, entertainment. And only the dignitaries could attend because the people of the surroundings were so poor. And again, this is during apartheid. This is an awful time in African history. In the 1900s, which is like a big deal. It's still the 80s, you know?
Right.
Not, you know, the 1800s. So majority of the Western world and their musical acts protested and wouldn't perform at Sun City.
Right.
And they would offer obscene money. So they gave Queen $3 million for two nights, which is a lot of money in 83.
Yeah,
it's just obscene. For two shows. And they're like, all right, yes, we'll go do it, all right. And they did it. And after they did it, there's a huge backlash. In America specifically, they were like, how dare you? How dare you cross the picket line? And Queen's response was very simple. Hey, we're not political. We're a band. You pay us, we're going to play. That's it. We're not political. I understand what this is. It's not my thing. I'm not political.
Right.
Which I get, because Starscream doesn't have a political affiliation. Like, we all have our own opinions.
Right.
But we would never go and be like, oh, vote Trump or oh, vote Obama. We just wouldn't do it. It just wouldn't happen in Starscream. We're not like that. It's not a political thing. It's a rock band. And Queen carried that same thing with four individuals.
I could see you supporting Cthulhu or Clactu from Army of Darkness, whatever.
You are greatly misinformed, sir. I'm a liberal, I guess, to my core, which makes me a quote-unquote snowflake or something. But the older I get, I understand fiscal responsibility. For real, which I didn't comprehend at 22.
That's known as a moderate.
I guess I officially am a moderate.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I don't mind food stamps, and I don't mind helping people. I really, really, really don't. I don't give a shit. Like, I think it's positive.
Right.
Birth control should kind of be available. You know what I mean? Things like that. So, anyway, let's not get political.
Yes.
I'm not political. And neither's Queen. But everybody was really mad at them. They even made a single. They made a video that MTV pushed, Don't Play Sun City. It was like a thing, for real.
Wow.
So when Queen does this, there's a black eye on their career. The whole world was like, oh, fuck Queen, because they're like racist and shit. But they weren't. They just went for the money, which I get. $3 million for 2 days, I can't beat it.
Yeah.
It's not even acknowledged in the film. And it was a huge deal in real life. So when they played Live Aid, the rest of the world went, oh, we get it. They're that good. Which is true.
Right.
Like, they stole the show. They played not late in the day or anything. They weren't a headliner.
Yeah, it was like mid-afternoon for us. And they were one of the last bands playing over at Wembley Stadium in England.
Was it that?
Yeah.
I didn't, because I know it was daylight there, so it was a little confusing to me.
Well, it wasn't one of those all night things. And
yeah,
there
it was here though.
But there were still three more, two or three more acts after Queen, And one of them was the headliner, Elton John.
Exactly.
There and Elton go. John's set was like 2.5 hours.
And he couldn't. He was like, "You bastards!"
Right.
Because they like blew him off the stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So they stole the show. They become the big effing deal. They're queen. You know what I mean? And the world like kind of got off their back and were stopped busting their balls. And then he got sicker and sicker. So they didn't tour anymore. They didn't do anything. A record came out, I believe, in 89 or 90. I think it's in that time frame.
Yeah.
And that wasn't he. The show must go on, and all that stuff. And if you remember the video, I think it's called "Innuendo" was the name of the single. He looks like death, like he's dying.
Yeah, I remember.
And I'm like, oh, he must have cancer, because a little kid didn't get that AIDS the thing. You know what I mean? I just didn't get it. But I was like, oh, I think he has cancer. And then boom.
I was just learning about it at that time too.
I guess so. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I was in public school.
Here, well, that gay sex you had probably prompted
true,
it.
True. Definitely. I have no idea.
But it's just so. And at any rate, that happened, and it's not even acknowledged in the film, which is heartbreaking to me because it could have been a huge plot point. It was a thing that did happen,
right?
And instead, it was like, you know, I don't think technically he's diagnosed by Live Aid at all.
No,
but they act like he is.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's kind of like
I remember there was an official release saying that he was sick and he wasn't going to make it real long in 90 or something like that.
Well, then no, the day before he died, he admitted he had it, and then he died. So it's like Monday, he's like, I totally have AIDS, and he dies Tuesday.
Oh,
he knew. He's like, I have it. I don't want to hear about it, and he died. So it's really sad and it's really tragic. And then it was weird because I'm a heterosexual white American. Right, which makes me pretty much the worst thing in the world right now.
Yeah,
like, you know,
the
Me Too movement and the whole thing. I don't care. I get it. I kind of like women were sexually attacked, tortured in the work environment for 50, 60 years. Like this literally happened. I'm not dumb. I'm aware of this and I feel bad about it. I feel like actresses are a bit odder in my opinion because I don't know. You didn't have to touch his weenus to get the part. You did. I don't know. It's a weird thing for me. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
That's a really good question. If a woman feels violated, that's her right to feel that way.
Yes.
And it is her viewpoint on the situation is the only one that matters.
Oh, see, I don't agree with that sentence. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, that's a bit odd for me. Because there's two people. It takes two to tango. You know what I mean? Like, there's etiquette. Well, you shouldn't cross the line. I don't know. Like, for real. That's a little weird. And then... Go ahead.
With the life that I live in that kind of arena, in an intimate arena, consent is consent across the board. There has to be communication beforehand, and there has to be communication during. At some point, if the partner says no, then you stop. That's it. Then there is no...
Well, no, and I agree with that sentence. No, for real. Like, I get that. I've been in situations before where you're full on, things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's like, well, I'm not feeling this. And you're, hey, that's okay.
Right.
You put your weenus away.
I've been there personally myself where I've been like, yo, I'm just not into this right now. And
I've faked an orgasm and left. That has definitely happened. Now, without a condom, that's a trick. And I've done that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did. Yeah.
You pull out, you're like, oh, I did it in my hand. Oh, and then you run to the bathroom.
I was like, what is the modus operandi of that? How do you fake a male
orgasm? With a condom, it's simple. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm good. Thank you so much.
Elvis has left the building.
And then, I've done it a couple times, actually. I'm like, oh, this just isn't happening. It just doesn't happen. Like, yeah. Because sometimes little Vex has to let you know it's time to go home.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Had that happen the other day. Moving forward.
Boom. But I would hope that you weren't involved with Little Vex the other day, because that would be bizarrely unique in my humble opinion. Yeah, so wrapping up our long-winded 23-minute discussion about this Queen movie you didn't see, it's kind of Queen for Dummies.
Okay.
And I do love Queen so much. There should have been more music. It could have been. I don't know. It's because I'm so close to the subject matter that I'm like... particular about.
Right. It would be like me going to see a documentary or a movie about Iron Maiden.
Okay.
Like, I've been following them as a band, not as just the music, but as a band, their personal journey in and outside of Iron Maiden for 30 years.
Can I ask you questions I never really knew about Iron Maiden?
Okay.
No, seriously, I want to learn some things. I'm not all being right. sarcastic. I'm going to tell you an Iron Maiden story real quick. In the early 1980s, my dad, who adopted me, because he wasn't my real dad.
Right.
He was my great aunt's husband, which makes him my great uncle, has family in the great state of Illinois.
Okay.
And he would visit his mother and his sister and their kids or her kids every year for 2 weeks or whatever. And then when he retired from work, because he had a massive back injury, like plate stuff, he couldn't work anymore. He would go for a month. And my mother didn't like my father, which I didn't know until many years later. Like, I grew up in a household where she kind of hated his guts. They didn't fight or anything. She just hated my father. So we would go for a month. No, for real. So I hung out with these people. I had older cousins. So if I'm 11, one's like 17, 19 in that realm. And one was like 16, right? Okay. So the 19-year-old, you'd go in his bedroom, which for some reason in their rancher house they had was a massive. And he had a water bed, which is really hip. You know what I mean? Wow. Like cool.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah. And wall-to-wall coverage of Iron Maiden posters. And I'm not a Maiden fan yet because I'm little.
What year was this?
83, 84.
That's about just before I started getting into them.
So
I
you know.
Say 85, 86.
When did Iron Maiden? The mind thing, Peace of Mind, come out.
I would have to say probably 84.
Okay, so that's right around it, because that was definitely one of the posters. So, Killers is there. Like, the imagery for an 8-year-old kid or a 7-year-old kid to see the poster of Killers and just to get, and my cousin would be at work or at school or wherever he was at, and I could just stare at it.
That, you know what I mean? My basement.
And just sit there. And, like, so Iron Maiden imagery has been a part of my life since I could remember. I didn't get into the music yet, you know what I mean? But I got it. And then I started getting into rock and roll because of those two older cousins. Like, they had, like, a healthy tape collection. And I would, like, you know, start taking stuff and listening. And I remember, like, Run to the Hills was a huge deal to me at the time. That galloping on the fucking bass and shit. Like, it was so majestic and powerful. I didn't know anything about, is it Paul D'Altano?
D'Amano, I believe it is.
The original vocalist.
Correct.
I knew nothing because when on my introduction, we're headway into Bruce Dickinson land.
Right. That's so, where I came into it. I came into it during the Somewhere in Time album. That was
there you
when
go.
Somewhere in Time first came out. I was at Patch Music Under the L back in the 80s. And I walked up to my buddy, and I can't remember his name, but I said, "You have anything new that just came out?" And he showed me Somewhere in Time. So I left with that and a Black Sabbath album, I believe.
If it's a new Sabbath record at that time, it's not so good.
I was picking up something old probably at that point. At that point, I had just started making enough money to start buying two albums a week.
Two a week?
Yeah, I was very happy about that. I was a young entrepreneur handing out flyers. So there's that.
There's that.
Yes.
So the imagery of Maiden, Killers is the Paul. It's not Bruce.
Correct.
And I never had heard the record until later when I got into rock for real and started playing and the whole thing. The vocals are dramatically different. Like, he's definitely punk influenced. And then you can go on YouTube and watch footage of him. I kind of feel bad for the guy because the band outgrew him.
Yes.
Like in 77, 78, 79, when this is happening, punk rock's everything in England.
Yes, it was.
Everything. So he had short hair, and he had, like, the studded wristband and the leather gloves and the whole thing. And he was a good punk singer. The same kind of thing happened to the Police. The original Police guitar player was an awful punk guitar player. Like, awful. But he knew everybody.
Right.
You've got one of the best drummers on the planet Earth and one of the best bass players kind of around and this shitty guitar player. And they were like, "Well, we know a chap who's really good, but we want to be a punk band." And then the drum's like, "Yeah, I'm from America. Yeah, he's not really from America, is he? He's from South Africa. Stuart Copeland grew up in South Africa.
I have no idea.
Yeah, drummer for the Police. Okay. Anyway, he was a jazz drummer and a jazz like pro. Like, he was on records. A band called Curved Air, which you never heard of, but he was in that band. And he was accomplished. He could really play. So he just wanted to be famous. And he was like, "Well, punk's happening because it's like 77.
Right.
So he's like, "I'm going to get into a punk band." And they just kind of pushed the guitar player away eventually and just kept a real guitar player who was old. He was like 30-something then.
Oh, crap.
So now he's like 70-something. You know what I mean? And they were touring 10 years ago and he was in his 60s.
Right.
At any rate, back to the Paul situation with Iron Maiden. It was the same deal. He was a punk rock singer. The band kept growing with leaps and bounds musically. Like, if you listen to the transition.
That was Steve Harris pushing the other musicians
was in
the band. Correct.
I didn't know.
Iron Maiden is Steve Harris's band.
Oh,
so
that's a heavy sentence.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, as long as Steve Harris is there playing bass and writing music, there will always be an Iron Maiden.
Okay.
And they've now solidified to where they know that it's a whole package with Bruce Dickinson and the original lineup that they have now.
Yeah.
Well, the almost original lineup that they have now.
Well, what are they missing?
Well, the lead singer we were just talking
about. Well, Bruce has been like, but they got famous with Bruce, technically. Correct. Like, that's the thing. But so people my age only knew Bruce as the singer. I didn't comprehend it for a long time. Then Bruce leaves in the 90s, and they get that other guy with the weird, crazy sideburn thing happening.
Yeah, I can never remember his name.
But a pretty accomplished vocalist in his own right. Yes. Like, he was really good, and he's still touring and banging around now. He got very heavy. Like, I hate when they get heavy. Like, if you're going to be a professional musician, get a trainer. Go to the gym. Stop eating the Cheetos. Like, and I love the stuff. I love the junk food, but go to the fucking gym.
Start fencing. Flying a 747. You know, whatever.
You know, Bruce Dickinson's like 4 foot tall, right? He's really tiny.
Yeah, I've seen him not face to face, but I've seen him up close, like from the front row of a show in San Antonio on the floor.
Okay.
And it was just, I looked at him and went, God, you're a dwarf. Steve Harris is like not that tall either.
I have a sort of an Iron Maiden story, which could be complete bullshit, to be honest with you, but maybe it's not. And the guy's passed away, so I'm going to tell a story. We had a drummer named Vince. The same time we had the DJ, actually, 1,000 years ago.
Right.
And Vince has passed away a little over a year ago now, which is very sad. But he was one of our drummers in Starscream. And we're playing together, and he would get hammered because he kind of had a drinking problem.
Kind of.
Yeah, I had a drinking problem. And he would just tell elaborate, messed up stories. And I was a huge Motorhead fan, and he knew this. So he'd be like, oh, well, I know where Lemmy hangs out. And when we go in England on tour, we can go see Lemmy. Now, the irony is Lemmy had already moved to L.A. in 91, and this tour is until 2002. Oh. So it hurt my heart a little. So the story I'm about to tell you might not be real. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
But we don't know. We're going to see. He was 18 years old, the drummer. He was older than me. Probably around your age, actually. So when he was 18 years old, he had met a girl. And she had money, and she was cute, and she was hot, but she was older, like in her 30s or something.
Right.
And she had a bunch of, like, musicians crashing at her house that she was, like, theoretically banging here and there. So this guy, Vince, is just crashing there, and he's a really good drummer. He's accomplished. He played with L.A. Guns when they came to L.A. When they came to England. The drummer broke his wrist. He was one of the fill-in guys. Like, he was around.
Right.
And so he's crashing at this beautiful mansion. Someone knocks at the door, and he opens the door and he's like, hello, are you, mate? And he said the guy was really short, like, really short, and he had, like, bangs, and he couldn't see his eyes. And he just looked up at the guy, at Vince, and just kind of walked past them. Like, just get out of my way, child. This is my house, kind of thing. And it turns out later, he's like, that was Bruce Dickinson. I'm in Bruce Dickinson's house banging Bruce Dickinson's wife. And there's Bruce Dickinson. And so I don't know if that's BS or what, but in Motley Crue's book, The Dirt, Nikki Sixx relates a story where when they were young and they first went to England, probably on the Shout at the Devil tour, some girl climbed into his window and gave him a PJ and, like, you know. And he went to meet the opening, the headlining band the next day, Bruce Dickinson, with his wife, and it was the chick.
I've heard stories like that about Bruce Dickinson's first wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she definitely blew Nikki Sixx while they were the opening band. And Nikki didn't know because he's like 25. He doesn't know. He's like, oh, but we just touch it. It's amazing, you know? And he was just happy. He was like, this is rock star stuff. Yeah, I'm a rock star. And then he met the headliner, and it was his wife, and it was like hurt his heart, and he felt really bad. He was like, I'm going to get fired. And so she was that kind of broad.
Right.
So maybe this guy really did
maybe
hang out with her and stuff. And Bruce was just like, get out away from me. Just, oh my God, this is my mansion, man. And, you know, he would have fenced him to death or something with his sword.
More than likely. Or just flew a plane over him.
Well, that's the closest thing I have to an Iron Maiden story. Now, have you ever met anybody in Iron Maiden?
I met Steve Harris once at a bass clinic here in Philly when Sam Ash first opened.
What was that like?
I was the scared little long-haired skater kid in the back.
Yeah.
Sitting there staring at my idol.
He's really short, too.
Yeah, him and I were about the same height. I think I was probably 5'6 at that time.
You say 5'6?
Yeah.
Okay, and Sam Ash just opened? Impossible. Sam Ash opened in, like, 2001.
No, they opened up in the 90s.
Oh, well, I thought you meant the location at Franklin Mills Mall.
Yeah. Didn't they? Franklin Mills opened up in the mid-90s.
Franklin Mills opened up in the late 80s.
Okay.
The location of Sam Ash Music didn't get there until like 01, maybe 99.
Maybe I'm thinking of another location then.
Or was it Guitar Center?
No. No, I don't remember. Oh, no, it was Sam Ash King of Prussia.
That's right.
See? No, which we call it. It was that one. It wasn't the Franklin Mills one.
I know all about Sam Ash. It's my shit. And by the way, we love Sam Ash Music. You guys have kind of sort of sponsored and rock stuff from Starscream for a very, very long time. See, when we're on podcast and you do all those cool things, no one sees it.
It's like I pointed to my shirt. I'm wearing my Starscream shirt today. It's Thursday. No, it's Friday, isn't it?
Today's Friday.
I'm a day
and you're not wearing it. I don't see it at all. Yeah, there's nothing on there. Is it inside out?
No, it's the backwards one.
Get up and let me see. As you're making noise on my podcast. Holy shit, it is! Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. That's the, you have it on backwards, by the way.
I do?
Yeah, that's a front shirt.
Oh. Well, that explains a lot.
So, on the hoodie, that would be on the back of the hoodie.
Okay.
But only people who work for the project or work for the band directly are actually allowed to have the hoodie situation.
Right.
But that shirt itself is, you have it on backwards. So, you're wearing your Starscream shirt, which is great. So, you wear it backwards all the time?
No, it was rushing out of the house. Didn't realize it.
Okay. Do you ever watch Rick and Morty?
No.
You don't watch Rick and Morty?
No.
No, I'm just
kind of. I'm more into the adult cerebral animes now.
I got to tell you, this is pretty deep. Rick and Morty gets deep.
I know, but I can't stand the animation.
Really?
Yeah.
Explain.
It just doesn't do it for me.
Okay, I get it. I get that. It's supposed to be simple though. That's kind of the whole point.
Right.
You know what I mean? The charm of South Park for me is that it used to just be made with fucking like construction paper.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then they have state of the art technology. They're 20 some years in, but they're like, no. It's going to look exactly the same. It's just going to, and which I love. I think, do you watch South Park?
I used to.
The social commentary is amazing. Now, moving right along in our things that we're not supposed to be discussing anyway, do you play video games at all?
Yes.
Did you play Red Dead Redemption 2 yet?
I have not, but I did play the first one with my buddy.
Okay.
So, I'm really haven't got into more of the console games lately.
Okay.
I've still been playing a lot of my online games that you have to be a complete and utter nerd to understand to begin with.
What's the Fortnite? Is that the one? Like, that's the one all the kids are playing for real?
Yeah, I'm not into that. It's another console and PC crossover game.
Okay.
So, I'm just not really into it. It's a survival-based game.
Can you explain it to me a little bit? Because I don't know much about it.
You create a character, you go through the game, you start off with basic gear, and then you have to fight to survive.
Now, I heard you can spend real life money to be translated into the game to buy like chain mail and like weaponry.
Correct. You can purchase items in game through the store with real cash.
So that's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to buy a game that's $80, right?
Right.
And a system that's $400.
Right.
And then be like, oh, by the way, here's $40 so I can have these fancy shoes. Fuck that.
Well, I play World of Warcraft and I play Destiny 2. I did not play Destiny 1. I do play Destiny 2, and I play Portal and Portal 2 on a regular basis.
And I've never heard of anything except World of Warcraft. Like, it's the only one I've heard of. So, I'm not well-versed. I remember, here's, not that you care, but you're going to hear it anyway, Mike. I had an Atari,
2600?
2600, thank you. That was the second one, right? Because the first one's a 2400.
No, was it the 2600 or 2400? No, the 2400 was the first one.
Yeah.
The 4800 was the second one.
No, I had a 26. I had a 26. It was 24, 26, then 48.
Okay.
But anyway, I had a 26, which was not the first generation. It was the next one up. I know that much. And I was like 5. You know what I mean? And there's Pong. And we had Donkey Kong, which melted my... war with the tanks. Jesus.
Pitfall.
I loved Pitfall, actually.
I love Pitfall, too.
I played Pitfall until the 90s. Anyway, for real. So the Atari was the first. That thing still worked. Like, in the 90s, like, 12 years later, my parents still had it set up in a different part of the house. Like, we had an Atari 2600 upstairs. The Nintendo was in the basement, which was, like, the playroom. So they wouldn't get me in television. They were like, we just bought you this, and you're not getting... No. No. And I'm like, it's television. Play your Atari, which is, like... You know, awful in contrast.
Right.
And so in television, it's like, but then the NES comes out, Nintendo Entertainment System.
You completely forgot about ColecoVision.
I didn't forget it, but everyone else did.
Right.
Were you a fan?
Yes. I loved all the systems, television, ColecoVision, and Atari.
Okay.
I had all of them.
You were spoiled rotten.
No, I worked my butt off for them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I did not have. So I remember, here's what my. We had this, I don't know if you had one of these in your neighborhood. My mother was an older woman who had a friend who was an older woman who had a grown son who lived in her house. And because he was a grown man and he lived in her house and he didn't have any the girlfriends or children or anything, he would just spend his money on insane shit. So he had a Nintendo, an NES. And we would go over there to watch the wrestling pay-per-views because my mother would not let us get cable because my dad bought, this is in my book, I think. My dad bought a dish, right? Because you couldn't get cable in Philadelphia.
Yes.
So he spent like thousands of dollars for this giant thing on our roof, which is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
big. It looked like something from NASA, for real. So he had a dish, and it didn't. It got VH1, but it didn't get MTV, like shit like that. You know what I mean? Like kind of Bobo versions.
Right.
And so we had that, and then 2 years later, cable came to Philadelphia.
Remember.
And he was like, let's get cable. And she's like, oh, you don't remember the $5,000 on the roof? No. You already got something. That's it. So everybody else had cable. So when like WrestleMania would happen and stuff, we couldn't watch it. So we'd go to my mom's friend's house and hang out with her loser 30-year-old son, me, my dad, and the guy. For real. And we would go watch Flyers games because he had like everything. And we're just like, yeah, we're going to go watch WrestleMania. It's going to be amazing.
But anyway. I was actually at WrestleMania here in Philadelphia the first
closed circuit television, right?
No, it was at the Spectrum.
Yeah, with closed circuit television.
What do you mean?
That's how they showed the first one. Are you sure it was the first one?
No, the first WrestleMania, I believe, was at the Spectrum.
Oh, it was not.
Where was it?
Well, we're going to look it up right now. Please bear with us. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. We put you on pause for a second. So, WrestleMania 1, like I had suspected, was held at Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Because it's New York.
Yeah.
And then I remember the option existed, especially for 2, because by the time 2 happened, I was into it. Like, I was like, yes. 3 was the ultimate, and that's where I went to the person's house and watched. 3 was, like, the pinnacle.
Right.
Like, it's never been bigger. You know what I mean? Like, 3 was it. But 1 was definitely held on Madison Square Garden, but you could go to Philly at the Spectrum and watch it on closed circuit television.
Okay.
Which, because I don't think we had cable at the time yet. And then by WrestleMania 2, I think there was cable in Philly, and then definitely by 3, because I saw it. But we used to go, my dad and I, monthly to the Spectrum, actually, back then.
Okay.
And do you remember a guy who would dress like Hulk Hogan, who was, like, really thin and really tiny? But he looked exactly like him, and he had the belt and everything?
Yeah.
And when you're, like, 7, you're like, you have the belt? Daddy, how did you get... It's a real belt! Because I remember making belts out of construction paper, like a loser.
Too.
Like, for real. Uh-huh. And then wrestling the other kids, and then they would beat me up and take the belt. I'm like, but I lost the belt.
I made the belt. Give me my belt.
Like, I want it. It's my belt now. And, like, even at 7, my friends could sell. Like, you'd hit them, they'd be like, oh! And then you'd be like, oh! Like, even at 7, they knew. Like, I was like, you're very ahead of the curve here, you know? I kind of thought it was real for a while. But, yeah. So... The guy, the Hulk Hogan looking guy, must have weighed 160 pounds. He was tiny, and he had the hair, and he had the mustache. And he was like, hi, I'm not a Hulk Hogan. But he had a real championship belt. And it wasn't like the official WWF at the time belt, but it was pretty good.
Right.
I don't know, man. What are your thoughts?
You
remember the Hulk Hogan guy, right?
Yeah, that was so long ago, though. I barely remember.
Oh, I remember very clearly, vividly. The smells. I remember that we would talk to the security guy, because my dad would try to get us close to ringside, and be like, is Hulk Hogan going to come down? He's like, listen, kid, he comes down really fast. You might be able to touch him if you're lucky, but that's not very likely. He just goes. He doesn't stop. He doesn't care. He gets in the ring, and he puts on a show, and then he leaves.
That was the way the interview was when my dad took me to the first wrestling match.
Okay.
It was Hulk Hogan was, hey, little brother, how you doing? Mm-hmm. Gave me all this. His wristbands.
Oh my God,
like
that's
that.
Amazing.
Signed autograph, and it was the biggest one out of all the autographs that I got, the largest picture itself. And my dad talked to him for about 3 minutes, and then he took off and did whatever.
That's really amazing that he was so nice to you. Your dad, like, hooked you up, man. You met everybody. My God.
That, in the couple matches that we went to at the Spectrum over the years, when we got press passes and actually sat in the press box. We got to
now
talk
see
to
for
Lisa.
A kid that's like amazing,
right? And I had to act proper. Well, I couldn't be like yelling and screaming and jumping and stuff like that.
I respect that though. You're a little kid in the press box. I get
right.
That. That
so yeah, my dad was like, "You got to be good, but we're going to go see them, and you're going to get to talk to the wrestlers." And we talked to at least 2 every time. Well, at the most 2 every time we went there.
Okay.
So the best one was Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Dude, Jimmy killed his wife, man. Like Jimmy's not really a good guy there.
No,
but...
he's not a good guy. But the stuff that I got from him is now worth a lot more money.
Because he's dead, right?
Correct.
So what was he like?
It was really quiet, real laid back. You know what I mean?
He's like, I had just murdered some people, you know, so I wasn't really feeling the party lifestyle, if you will.
No, he was just, he was talking about wrestling with my dad for a little bit. Me being the young kid that I was just in awe. You know what I mean? So my dad got a couple pictures of me with each one of the wrestlers.
Sure.
I look like a doll next to Andre the Giant. Like, literally, I came up to like his mid-calf.
Big guy.
And I was like 12.
Okay. That's a bit odd.
Yeah. So I was like, I can't even see your face.
Was he cool?
Yeah, he was really cool. Him and my dad talked for about 20, 25 minutes before wrestling even started. So he was getting ready and getting, he was in his giant freaking robe and stuff like that sitting in there.
I want to tell you when my mom destroyed my childhood. Are you ready? It's going to be interesting. So the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan were in the midst of a, air quotes that you can't see, feud, right?
Yes.
And this is like America versus Iran, and I have the flag, and blah, blah, blah.
I remember that.
Little did I know that the Sheik actually participated in the U.S. Olympics for us. I had no idea. But, you know. He's from Tehran, Iran, though. He's from there. And then,
but he came here to America, right?
And competed in the U.S. Olympics for, he was like a coach or something. Like, he was our guy.
Okay.
Like, he represented us. He was, at one time, the bodyguard for the Shah of Iran, because he was really a physically intimidating guy.
Wow.
They have these giant, I can't even describe it. They look very long, heavy wooden sticks. And at the end of it, it's kind of like, you ever see a butter turner?
Yes.
It's like that at the other end of the stick. And they'd have to do these exercises.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
So he could do that fluidly. He was massively built, like massively built. He was a strong, tough competitor in real life. You know what I mean? And then he got into pro wrestling for the money. And his first gimmick, he was like, oh, I'm the American. Yes, I like to go to the Olympics. Like, that was his thing. Like, he was like the American hero for real in the 70s. Anyway, the Sheik thing made him money. At any rate, him and Duggan are going at it, like, all around the country. So Duggan's new to the WWF, okay? He's happy to be here. He's from down south or wherever he was from. He was married at the time. And he rents a car. And the Sheik comes up. He's like, hey, you want to ride together and save money? And he's like, all right, fuck it. Oh, yeah, okay. And they went and they got a couple of six packs of beer because in 1985 or whatever, that's what you did.
Right.
And they're driving and they're drinking the beers and throwing in the backseat. Everything's cool. And of course, the Sheik has drugs on him.
Oh, no.
Of course he does. You don't know this, but Duggan's like the son of like a sheriff. Like he's like, his dad's like.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah. So he knows how it works. They pull him over and he's like, oh, shit. And he knows he's got six crumpled beer cans behind the seat, you know what I mean? And he pulls over and they're like, hey, what's going on? And of course the Sheik was smoking a joint. Like, of course he was, because he's the Sheik. And it's like heading to the arena. Like, they're like miles away, you know what I mean? So they all get locked up on drug charges, which is a big deal.
Right.
Like, you're moving marijuana from state to state. This is like a big thing.
Yeah, that's like in trafficking the 80s. At that point.
Well, it hits every newspaper in the country. And my mother clips out the article. And she's like, look what you watch. And I was like, but I'm seven. Like, why can't I believe that they're this? What? Why?
That's like telling a five-year-old about Santa Claus.
And she didn't do that. But it felt mean. Like I don't know, man. And I remember keeping it. And I was like, is this real? Why would the Iron Sheik hang out with Hacksaw Jim Duggan when Duggan's a hero? I don't understand. And I definitely kept it. I think I still have it, actually, this little clipping. But I got arrested and all. And then Duggan was afraid to tell Vince because like, they got out and they went and did the match. And he was like, so, and then he just got sent home. And he had to come to his wife and be like, yeah, I like lost my gig for a minute. They brought him back. But
yeah, I remember.
It really hurt the Sheik's career tremendously. Like, he was like, he never got to that height again.
No, he was really good back when his phasing out is when The Undertaker came in.
Well, do you know anything about The Undertaker? Like, I remember when The Undertaker had red hair and was still in the NWA. Like, I remember that. Like, World Championship Wrestling. Like, he wasn't
The Undertaker.
I remember
when he came to WWF.
Yeah. He was massive, but without the black hair, not as intimidating. Like, he had real natural, he has red hair naturally. That's what he looks like. Oh, yeah, yeah. So he wasn't as intimidating, but then they make the black hair and the whole thing. By the time that shtick happens, I had gotten laid. Like, sex was, like, real. I was like, oh, you mean you have sex? And then someone else will have sex with me, too? This is amazing. So I didn't even care about wrestling. I was like, this is done. I'm out. Like, I always tell Johnny Zero, the guy I host the TV Dads wrestling thing with.
Yeah.
I know a lot about wrestling from, like, 75 to, like, 89.
Right.
In February the 19th of 1990, I fornicated for the first time. I was like, very nice. Very nice. And that was it.
I don't even remember the date.
Oh, I burn it in my memory. I know how. I was 14. She was like 16, which was like a tremendous deal to me for some reason. She had a perfect body. She was kind of a slut. But I didn't know. I was just happy. It was good times. Giant winter bush because it's the 1990s.
Oh, God.
A lot like your chin.
Hey.
Yeah, it's true. That's what it looked like. I was just happy to be there.
I'm familiar. Saw one the other day. And I remember the crap out of me.
Round two of that encounter, I remember hammering and I'm like, this is nice.
I'm having sex, right? And I'm like, when I leave here, I'm going to go, and this, I swear to God, this is true, I'm going to go buy fudge bars at the corner store and go home and eat some fudge bars and drink some milk. And I remember coming home that day because it was President's Day and we were all from school, and I had fornicated in my friend's basement because I'm classy. I'm a classy guy.
And as we know.
I took a shower at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and no one found this odd. No boy, for no reason, showers at 3 a.m. in the afternoon. But I did, and my mom didn't question me. And I remember thinking, why didn't she question me? She didn't care. She just hated my dad. Hate my dad. Like, that's where that was.
Right.
So, yeah, I remember that very vividly. Remember that, the whole thing. And then I was kind of, like, coldish to her when I walked her to the bus. Because, again, classy guy. Why, what? What's the matter?
I'm thinking.
I even know her name. I'm not going to say it, obviously. Well, her first name was Kim. But the last initial. Her name was not Jen. It was Kim.
No, mine was Jen.
Okay.
Freshman year in Mass Bomb.
Yeah, I was also a freshman. There you go. So you're in the 80s then.
Yeah. So we're talking 85.
You're 4 years older than me?
Yeah.
What year were you born?
Let's 72. Say.
Okay. So it's 3 years. That's okay.
Yeah, it was my freshman. It was freshman year. I don't remember exactly.
Well, you would start fall 85, and it would go into the end of the year would be 86.
Right. So it was beginning of the school year for my freshman year, probably.
Wow, you hammered fast. I had to wait till February.
End of September, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we started the middle of September.
You didn't knock her up right away, did you?
No. I didn't have a kid until I was 20.
That's good. I didn't have any.
Not even any scares until then.
I've had the scares.
No.
I even have one procedure under my belt. Yeah, that happened. Man, what are you going to do? It's life.
Exactly.
I think about it sometimes, though. But that chick became a doctor. So can I even be mad? Like, she became a doctor. Like it was my idea. I was like, no, this is bad. She's a fucking doctor. Like, I found her on Facebook somewhere. I was like, good for you. You're a doctor. And she's married. She's happy. And her life is beautiful. And here I am in my another divorce. Finger guns. Right. But I saved a lot of money not having a child. It's it's a huge, laborious task. And
I'm still paying for mine.
There you go. And I have a nice big house, so I didn't get any kids, and there you go. Boom. Right. Boom cock, as they say. I don't know. That got dark. So how did it go down? What was your situation with the first time?
We were in a couple of the same classes together.
Okay.
At Mass Bomb.
Yes.
And there was a girl that was crushing on me from my music class.
Okay.
Another girl named Jen, different Jen.
Oh, so you're just a whore, I guess.
And I wasn't digging that Jen. Still am not digging that Jen, even though she tries to this day. And one thing led to another, and I was kind of the guy that sat in between two friends, and the girl Jen was one of them. She sat on my left, and her friend Erica sat on my right.
Okay.
So I used to send them little specifically folded notes in between the two of them on a regular basis for the first couple of weeks of school. And then Jen passed me one and said, and I went to hand it to Erica, and she said, no, that one's for you. And I said, oh. And I just opened it up, and she said, I like you. Let's have sex.
Aww.
And I said, I wrote on the bottom of it, okay.
Stop. Let that sink in.
I like you, and let's have it to sex.
And you're like, okay. Did you keep the note? No. She has the note, right?
She probably has
the note. And you know she's experienced. Like, she had done that before.
It was both of our first times.
All right. Two things. I'm glad mine was broken in and understood how it worked, because I had no idea what was happening. So, that was good. A. B. I have had the gift of, I think, 4 or 5 virgins in my life. They're never good. And let me tell you why, Mike. They don't even understand what you're good at.
Right.
Like, I can rock and roll in that thing.
Right.
But you have no idea I can rock and roll, because you have nothing to compare it to.
Exactly.
So I've definitely done that. There was a girl, my God, Starscream was playing Rosemont College, which was an all-girls university, or is an all-girls university, actually. And we had a bad habit of going to a lot of all-girls universities playing music over the years. But this must have been in 2002?
No,
earlier. Earlier, because whatever year... What's his name came back? All right. Santana had a huge comeback. I guess it's 99.
98.
Was it 98?
Yes.
So the 99, it would have been 99. So the 1999 Grammy Awards would have been in February of 99 to recognize the 98 work. And he won like every Grammy because he was like back, right? Mm-hmm. That huge record he had. And so I remember watching the Grammys with this girl. She was who's the head of the dorm? What are they called? The dorm what?
I don't know.
So I can't think of the word. And I know that you're listening to the podcast going, it's this, Vex. It's this word. But I have no idea what you're thinking or saying because it's a fucking podcast. So anyway, she's the dorm leader or some shit.
Right.
And she had a bigger dorm at the corner. So I could sneak in and out because she's the chick. RA. She's an RA. Oh, that's what it was.
Resident administrator.
Boom! Yes. Look at that. The brain's kind of working between the two of us. Between the two of us, we're one man. So she's an RA, and she's 18 and completely a virgin. Beautiful, perfect body, tiny, petite, long, beautiful brown hair, giant blue eyes, perfect. The girl's perfect. A little bit tan skin, like she's really attractive. And so I played her college, and we hit it off, and we did the deed. And we did it a couple times, and then she broke it off with me. And I remember thinking, I know why you broke it off with me. Because you think everybody rocks like I rock. So you're like, I'm going to go rock with the guy down the hall. But he's 18. He does not rock like the Vex rocks. He does not know.
I just had this conversation.
Did you really?
With somebody.
Tell me.
Younger woman that I know. She's like talking about this. And she doesn't have a lot of practical experience in the field.
Sure.
And we had some practical experience together. Exactly like you're talking about here. And she goes, why don't younger guys know how to do what you do? And I was like, you've already answered your own question.
Years of practice, my friend.
And I was like, it's taken me this long to get this good. And she goes, how long? I'm like, 30 years.
Well, I had it figured out about 3. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Maybe 4. All right. By 94, I was rocking. I was putting it down.
I would say by 88.
Yeah, because I started in 90. But like by 94, I was definitely rocking. And I remember at 94, I had a long-term girlfriend. I loved her so much. But I cheated on her because I'm stupid. So listen, it wasn't called Starscream. We were called The Broken back then. Same effing band, though. Me and King Sam are still a band to this day, but it was called The Broken. And we got popular somehow. I don't know how. It just happened. Sam could really always play. Okay. I couldn't sing, but Sam could play. And then we got a really good drummer. So now you have a rocking band. Shitty bass player, shitty singer, great guitar player, great drummer. And the songs were good.
Good backbone.
It is a good backbone. It's there. And we play like underage shows and stuff. Because no one of us were 21. We were kids.
Right.
And girls were just falling out of the sky. And I had said this probably many times in this podcast, and I apologize. When you start being a musician, no one wants to have sex with you. You're not good yet.
Right.
You're the kids in high school who smell weird. Uh-huh. You hang out under the bleacher smoking cigarettes. Like,
raise his hand.
Exactly. So the girls aren't digging that.
Right.
But if you put the work in, quote unquote, Eddie Van Halen, because that's what he did, they fall out of the sky.
Yes.
And they fell out of the sky because we start the band in 91. By 94, 95, we're happening. Like, it's rolling in our little underage circuit. Dude. Pussy everywhere.
Yeah.
Like young, beautiful women, some not even so beautiful. I was just happy they were saying, yeah. I was like, I'll hit it. Let's rock and roll. And yeah. Oh, it was a gnarly. But it's fun. And AIDS was hanging around, kind of. There was a lot of contraceptives still back then, I guess.
A lot of money on condoms back in the 80s and 90s.
You want to hear a condom story? Let me tell you a condom story. So I'm leading up to 1990. I know I'm going to lose. Oh, I did lose it. So I already lost it in February. So now in my mind, I'm like, you never know. You could go out and you could close the deal. You never know, right? And this is my thinking because I closed the deal once. I could close it again, right?
Exactly.
I'm 14 years old. I'm 14. We had like a 5-day weekend for Easter because I went to North Catholic. And I went and bought a 60-pack of Trojan lubricated condoms. I'm going to say it slower.
Wishful thinking.
A 60-pack, right? Of course I put them in my sock drawer because I'm a moron, right? My mother did my laundry because I'm 14. She sees them. So in front of the family, she's like, I understand that you need contraceptives. I do. Why did you have to buy 60? And I'm like, Mom, it's a 5-day weekend. Hey. And she's like, bang, boom, bang. Like she was mad. That's my big delivery. That's it. That was my condom story. Second part of the condom story. So, of course, I had 2 or 3 of them in my wallet at all times because you never needed them, but you never knew. Right. One could say, yeah, right? And I went to a Catholic high school, and I lost my wallet, like in study hall. It fell in my pocket or some shit. And my stupid ID's in it. I'm like, I look like a jerk off in the picture because I was like frowning. And so, of course, they return the wallet to you, the brothers or the priest or whatever.
Right.
And the condoms were gone. And I remember thinking to myself, you want me to get someone pregnant? Like, I know it's a sin, quotation mark, but I'm 14. If they say, yeah, I'm going to fire early.
Right.
I'm not going to know when it's finishing.
Right.
It's going to happen. That blew my mind a little. But contraceptive is a sin, technically. Or it yes. was at that time. I don't know if it still is technically. This Pope's pretty...
Yeah, he's pretty liberal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one that sneaks out at night and feeds the poor and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he also covered up some molestation shit, I think, too. Like, it's a weird dichotomy and a slippery slope. Like, I have affinity for the Catholic Church because I grew right. up part of it. I went to Catholic school for a very long time, for 13 years. I went to kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. So 13 right. years of Catholic school. My mom was part of the church. She would clean the church. You ever see that commercial for the pine oil where they'd show the old ladies cleaning the pews
yes.
once a year? My mom was on that team.
Oh, wow.
In our church, who cleaned the pews. And they did use that shit. Like,
yep.
it was like a thing.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, so I have affinity. I do. And our priest was very cold towards us. He wouldn't engage with us. But he didn't want to have anything brought to him. Now being an adult and understanding it. I just thought he was a jerk off. He was arrogant. He wasn't arrogant. He has no need to have a conversation with an 8-year-old boy.
Right.
Ever. So he would be like, hey. And that's cool. He's an adult. And he was like, yeah, he had like a doctorate, actually. He was a doctor.
Hmm.
And he wanted to be... part of, you know, when you go to Rome and you're part of the Vatican,
yes.
and you're like a pimp, you're like, I'm part of the Vatican. And Pope John Paul II sensed it, a hair of arrogance, and was like, yeah, you're not going to be here in the Vatican. I'll send you back to Philadelphia.
Oh, no.
Okay. And he just, he died inside because he was going to rise up. But arrogance, man, it's a sin.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yes. All right, we're done, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for being a part of episode number 33 of the Vex on Vex podcast.
No, okay, yes.
So thanks for hanging out.
Thank you.
We're going to do a second part. We're going to stretch and get something to drink.
Yes.
And you'll be back for episode number 34.
34.
1 year today, kids. Thank you so much for listening. The Vex on Vex podcast is available on the Podbean application on your phone and the Loud and Loaded Network. Also, you can hear the TV Dads Wrestling podcast. My name is VexX, along with Mike, telling you to stay frosty.